The Loose Cannons podcast is a free-form discussion about film that contains mature language,
such as poop and titty,
and descriptions of mature situations,
such as filing taxes and raising children.
We do not have any concern for spoilers, so if you haven't seen the film or films we are discussing and don't want to have the twists ruined for you, please watch the film before listening to the podcast.
Hello, everyone. Another Loose Cannons podcast coming at you. We've got our regular crew again with us today. This is Ruben. Say hello, Patrick.
Hello, this is Patrick.
Basil.
Hey, everyone.
Ilya.
Ilya.
Yep.
This is Ilya.
We're going to be discussing 1937's The Spanish Earth, directed by Joyce Ivins. Documentary film about the what's the name of this war? The Spanish Civil War?
Yeah.
Aren't I supposed to do the summation?
Yeah. I'm passing it over to you now. This is Basil's pick.
Okay.
But I, yeah, just like for Prince Achmed, I said, you know, important classic animated film. That's all I was saying.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So yeah, this is a documentary about the Spanish Civil War. It was made fairly early on in the war when the Republicans were still kind of like winning, and it seemed like the fascist like rebellion was going to be put down, and that the only reason it hadn't been was that Germany and Italy were sending supplies to help the fascists. And and so it kind of interweaves a narrative of like a small town that's trying to create a kind of irrigated field so that they can grow crops to help support the troops, and then cutting between that and actual troops on the front line in Madrid who are doing the actual fighting. And there's kind of a structural back and forth between the two narratives, and it doesn't really have a resolution, as obviously the war was still going on. And the whole thing is narrated by Ernest Hemingway, who was one of several American and European sort of like intellectual authors and important people who became very interested in the war and supporting the Republicans fighting off fascism.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. What did you think of this movie?
Yeah, I liked it. I thought it kind of navigated this. You know, for documentaries, always pretty tough road between making like acknowledging its participation in something and being observational, and at the same time I thought that like it was done with a specific intent. Like I think it was done to basically create sympathy for the cause of the Republicans in Spain, and I thought it did a really good job of that. I thought the narration and what was being filmed was at odds at times. I thought Hemingway at times sounded like something between Christopher Walken and Arnold Schwarzenegger, like just like really weird sounding. And I thought that like there were a couple of moments, we can talk about those later, but where I felt like his voice was actually kind of, I didn't like it at all, and it would have been maybe even better without him. But you know, it was for the cause, so I guess it helped more people watch it. I don't know. But yeah, I like the way it was done. I like the way it was shot. It moved me in a way that I think was it tended to do. But I did a good job of that.
Patrick?
No, I'm next.
Oh no, wait, it's Ruben.
Yeah. I was gonna make a pretty similar point, which is that like I felt it was weird that first of all that Ernest Hemingway's language was so florid, especially compared to his typical writing style. But it was especially weird that it was so florid, and yet the delivery of it was so not theatrical at all. And we'll probably talk about this, but Orson Welles apparently originally did a reading of the narration, but there was some conflict there, and they eventually decided on having Hemingway do it instead. I felt kind of where Ilya felt. I liked it. I thought that the images were great, and like I was really like surprised by like the closeness of the film to like what was going on. Like I was watching and I was like, wow, are they like in real danger like right now? And then like I looked up some stuff, and that was basically Ernest Hemingway's account is like, so we were in this one position and we thought we were pretty good there, and then the sniper's bullet went by my head, so we decided to move to a different position, and then two more sniper's bullets went by my head as we moved from one position to the other. And I was like, yeah, so they were pretty close to the action. And I could feel that, you know, just watching the film. And it was only confirmed by my little bit of research done between when I watched this movie this morning and our podcasting of it now.
I liked this movie as well, and I was kind of not into it at first. I was just watching like the scenes of people like farming and stuff like that, and talking about how they needed to do it for the, you know, for the people to survive, or whatever the narration was saying. And then it started getting just progressively sadder and sadder, talking about like the struggles of the people and the shelling and stuff that was going on. And I just got more and more involved in the story and what was going on. And I was like, wow, this is super heavy. Like, I didn't expect it to be this heavy. I guess I don't know what I was expecting going into it, because I had completely forgotten everything I read about it beforehand when I went in to watch it. And I was like, wow, this is like, not only is it heavy narratively, but visually, you know, you see the bodies of children who have been hit by shells and, you know, just have blood pouring out of them on the ground inside of this lobby at one point. And I was just like, wow, that's like, and then there's just people just like walking through the lobby, like not even acknowledging the bodies. It's just like, you know, that's pretty heavy when that's part of your everyday life, is just walking by the bodies of people who have been shelled. And even the narration started to become more and more sad. It was like people, you know, stand in line and sometimes a shell falls and they just don't come back with food or whatever. And it's just like, I got more and more invested in what was going on. And the way that Hemingway phrases things sometimes, like he doesn't explicitly say like people died. He just says it like that. He's like, people don't come home or whatever. When he's talking about the soldiers and their little formations, he's like, and three or four soldiers that once were six or something like that make it through the lines or whatever. And you're just like thinking it's kind of like a triumphant thing where it's like they made it, but at the same time you're thinking, oh yeah, but these other people also died doing that. So it's an interesting way of putting it, as opposed to just saying, you know, these people died. He's saying these people made it through, but we also, you know, there were more people that were with them in the beginning. So it's interesting that way.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that that's sort of more just like part of Hemingway's stylistic idea, that like somehow not explicitly saying it makes it stronger or something like that. But I did notice that also. But I also like the movie. I mean, the very first thing that I wrote was Hemingway is hilarious, because his narration did not seem to fit. I felt the same way that Ilya did, that at first was like his big, like booming voice felt very strange to how like kind of small and like concrete the George Ivan's sort of like the look of the film. I mean, he's definitely got a very interesting just like regular people doing their daily stuff and how that has its own kind of interest. And I guess it's hard for me whenever I watch a movie like this to not like counterpoint it to Triumph of the Will, and I thought it was very interesting how even like the the leaders of the Spanish army, there's kind of like a way that the film humanizes them and makes them like regular people like everyone else, that Triumph of the Will definitely doesn't allow Hitler to become. He's definitely continually like deified, and that like there's that one guy giving a speech over the radio and he kind of like does the fist thing that's like the Spanish Civil War like they're kind of like call to arms, and then he like kind of puts his hand down and like does this like kind of awkward smile afterwards, and I was like, oh, he's just like a regular guy.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that they talk about what the people did before they were leaders in the army. Like they say, you know, mm-hmm. he was a bookseller or something like that. I can't remember. I think that was one of them, or you know, one of them is like a German guy who's just like an author who decided to take up the cause. And I thought that was interesting that they actually have, you know, people from other countries coming in being part of their cause as well, which I think was something that you probably wouldn't see in Triumph of the Will, is foreigners right. helping out.
Yeah, George Orwell also joined the Republicans, and then he wrote a book about it afterwards called Homage to Catalonia. At first he just came there as a reporter, but then like he was so moved by the cause that he ended up like joining the army. It's pretty cool.
I think for like examples of the where I thought that the narration was definitely kind of weird was when there was that they showed a dead body. The camera showed a dead body, and then Hemingway started talking over the frame of that body, saying, "This is a man who had nothing to do with the war, a bookkeeper." And it's like, I thought like the guy, like the camera, the way it showed him, gave him a little bit more dignity than like a bookkeeper, you know, like, or like there's another shot of a woman when there's I think there's an evacuation going on, and they show the face of an old woman, and then Hemingway starts talking over it saying, "I won't go, I'm too old," like he kind of assumes her point of view, and it's like, what are you doing, like what is going on? It's so strange.
I have a funny story.
Have you been looking stuff up this whole time?
it's about the Orson Welles thing. So this comes from openculture.com. They have some good history on the Spanish Earth. And apparently, Welles was saying that there was too much narration and that it was too pompous, and Hemingway said that his delivery of the narration here's Hemingway. So he says, "You effeminate boys of theater, what do you know about real war?" And then Welles says that what happened is, while taking the bull by the horns, I began to make effeminate gestures, and I said to him, "Mr. Hemingway, how strong you are and how big you are." That enraged him, and he picked up a chair. I picked up another, and right there, in front of the images of the Spanish Civil War, as they marched across the screen, we had a terrible scuffle. It was something marvelous. Two guys like us in front of these images representing people in the act of struggling and dying. We ended up toasting each other over a bottle of whiskey.
Well, Orson Welles and Ernest Hemingway having a fight.
Orson Welles' instincts, awesome. Once again, are totally on point.
So he says that that happened, but it's not necessarily
but
true.
I want to see that in a movie. Is it?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I think like that's also what I felt, is that like Hemingway thought, probably was thinking he was giving this whole thing like a more, I don't know, like not glamorous, but like macho glamour or whatever, by mm-hmm. adding his voice to it.
A toughness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, I and don't.
I mean, I agree with you that Joyce Ivan's imagery is like really strong, and a lot of times it sort of speaks for itself, and then, you know, his voice comes in, and I'm like, okay, I mean, yeah, I already got it, but thank you. Like, I watched another Joris Ivens movie right after this called Philips Radio, which is just like showing a radio being built in a Philips factory and has almost no narration, and I liked it even more than this one.
Yeah, I like the Valparaiso more than this, which has narration, but it's by it's in French, and it's I don't think it's Chris Marker, because I don't think that he ever does his own narration, but Chris Marker wrote it, and it's much more poetic and less heavy-handed. And I also like that, yeah, that movie more. But this was, I don't know, I the images are very beautiful, and I like that he didn't shy away from acknowledging that the camera was there and that people could see it. Like, there's lots of shots where one guy in the background is just staring straight at the camera.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what I was also, that was really, that's something that I was struck by, because, like, I guess, in a sense, like, this sort of documentary, which is almost, like, bordering on ethnography or whatever, where it's like, well, yeah, let's look at these people and their environment and, like, you know, how they are living, that he managed to include and, like, make his presence felt, that he was an intrusive presence, like the camera is an intrusive presence, and at the same, and that people are allowed to acknowledge how weird it is that it's there, because obviously they were a little bit, like, put off by it, at the same time also acknowledging the fact that this was probably doing them some good, because this might lead to, like, them getting help. I don't know, and I felt like the camera, he did a really good job of, like, switching between all these kinds of different, like, I thought the camera was all over the place. I don't know how long it took him to, like, get all these shots the way he did, but it seemed like he was really inventive with, like, placements of the camera and, you know, like, and the editing of it. I thought that it gave, like, there was, like, a lot of work went into it, I felt, at least, you know. It was not just like him running around with the camera and pretending to be like cinema verite or whatever, you know, like that would have been really annoying.
There's definitely multiple people filming, I'm pretty sure, because I don't like for the amount of time it probably would have taken to get all this footage, I don't think that Ivans could have captured it. I don't even know for sure if he filmed any of it, because he's listed as director, but someone else is listed as the, like, cameraman or something like that. So I'd be interested. I mean, he was probably there, but I don't know if he was as close to the front lines as everyone else ended up getting. Who's to say? I guess I could look it up.
The historical account that I read from Hemingway made it sound like Ivans and Hemingway were getting shot at.
Oh, wow. That makes sense.
I forgot what I was going to say. There's something other than that.
There's a couple of images where I thought that were actually, like, even, I don't know, not distracting, but, like, I definitely remember them really well. There's a shot near the end, like, I watched it on YouTube, where it was, like, interrupted by saying, like, reel one, reel two, and so on. And, like, so, and it was, like, near the end of reel two, so, like, around, like, the 16-minute mark or whatever, there's a shot of a house from a shelter, and the camera looks, was looking through, like, this shot through piece of a wall, and, like, what the camera's looking through looks like a tank. Like, the hole in the wall looks like a tank. And I thought that was, like, really, like, I don't, like, it was probably just, you know, it just happened or whatever. But, like, I felt like that was kind of, like, I don't know, almost too on point or almost too beautiful or whatever. Like, it was,
I remember that shot, but I didn't even notice that it looked like a tank.
Yeah, I kind of, maybe that's, like, that's, I kind of read into it. But actually, like, I rewinded it again, and it kind of, like, that was, like, my first, the first thing that sprung to my mind when I watched that.
I remember the thing that I was going to say, which is that there's that one shot from kind of low, and it's like, the man with the beard is so-and-so. He was a lawyer before the war. He was a great soldier. He died in the battle that we filmed. And I was like, wait, what? Like, yeah. I don't know if it was, like, intentional, but that moment really worked for me, and the way of being, like, pointing out that, like, in a way, like, in these types of films, like, especially in narrative war films, it's like you're introducing a character just for them to die. Like, it's not for them to have a life. You're introducing them as an object of death, and, like, this movie did that over and over again in a way that made me feel really sad.
Yeah, that moment hit really hard for me, too. I thought it was really just, like, an interesting way to position the fact that, like, film is sort of capturing, like, a moment in history that's, like, in the past, and you're, like, looking at a person who doesn't exist anymore. Yeah, it's real weird.
Yeah, definitely.
And unsettling.
For sure.
For
sure. Yeah, I don't know. Like, the whole thing had like an urgency to it. I felt like there was like, we're doing this because we need to do this. Like, this needs to be done, and like there needs to be something done about it. And like, even when Hemingway is hamming it up in some way, or I feel like I don't. For just one last thing with the narration that I kind of remembered. Was at the end there, you see some when after the bombings, I think you see like some German text or whatever written on on the rest of these like vests or whatever that are lying on the ground, and Ernest Hemingway was like, "Yeah, I don't read German either." It's like just breaks from his script and is like, "Yeah, sure. It's like I don't get it either, stupid German."
Yeah.
But then I thought it was interesting that, like, he says that, but then it felt like Ivins was, like, doing almost the opposite, because when he shows, like, the dead Italian fighter pilots, to me that was, like, just as sad almost as, like, the dead people in Madrid. And I was like, wow, that's pretty cool of Ivins to, like, not, like, completely xenophobically hate Italians and Germans. Yeah.
For a movie that's almost like supposed to be kind of propagandistic, almost, you know.
Sure,
it is propagandistic.
Yeah,
I don't think you can say that it's not.
Yeah, it's definitely trying to engender American support of the war effort, which makes the movie even sadder to me that like it didn't work, and then the Republicans lost, and Spain was a fascist country for like way longer than anyone else.
Yeah, that's pretty rough.
Sure. And also, oh, go ahead.
No, that's
cool. This is totally off topic, but I thought it was interesting that, like compared to how movies usually show it, like, the trenches that were just made of doors, like, they just, like, took doors off of houses that had been destroyed and, like, use them to build trenches. I thought that was like an interesting touch compared to like how kind of constructed and like very meticulous trenches tend to look in like actual Hollywood movies that show the war.
Yeah. Also, I think that like the movie did a good job of not making the population look like they're just, you know, like America, please help us or whatever. We're so poor and blah blah blah. Like there's a real like kind of almost like euphoric moment when that irrigation thing starts working, when the water starts flowing through it. I thought that was really, really awesome. Like I thought, and it also like it gave the whole thing this idea that like, hey, like we're doing stuff here, like we're taking care of ourselves, but we just need your stupid military to maybe help us out. But otherwise, we're all good here, you know, like. Where we take care of our own. And I thought that was kind of cool. Like it gave the whole thing like it's not just, you know, like the war is happening, but these people are still like caring for like their needs and caring for their population. And, you know, I thought that was pretty great. Didn't waddle in.
Sure. Yeah, I agree. I wondered if Because I watched a whole bunch of British World War II documentaries that had a very similar bent, and I wondered if this movie kind of was a partial inspiration. I never read anything like that, but it wouldn't surprise me because Joris Ivens is like very sort of socialist and social leaning, and so were the people who made those documentaries in Britain. They were all part of the Labour Party, and they were dedicated to this idea of like showing the people like doing jobs and how important their jobs were as a way of like reinvigorating the people, but also laying the groundwork after the war when like the Labour Party kind of created a more social democracy in Britain, which I was totally for.
Yeah.
Way to go.
Yeah, I thought someone talked about the beginning, I think it was Patrick, that it was going to be an entirely different movie than it ended up being, because as you guys know, I tend to not look up that much about movies before I watch them. And when it was like about the irrigation and like the land and whatnot, I thought it was going to be like The Plow That Broke the Plains, like the Per Lawrence documentaries that FDR commissioned that were all just like, and they toiled in the dirt.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it started out as.
And I couldn't stop thinking about Land Without Bread, which is, I really like that movie, which is like basically a parody of all of that type of documentary. But luckily it became, at least in my opinion, luckily it became something different. I actually watched a Joris Ivens documentary that was commissioned by FDR, and it was that, and it was pretty boring.
Wait, what was that one called?
The Power and the Land. It was just basically about, you know, how farmers needed electricity, and then it was like, with the turn of a hand, water instead of minutes pumping at the well. Ask any housewife what they're most excited about, and it's their electric irons. Saving so much time ironing. With electric irons.
I did really like the shots, I guess, at the end of the film when they kind of like cut from the Republican soldiers like winning a battle to the farmers finally like striking part of the land and the water starting to flow down the trench or whatever. I thought that was a kind of a cool cut and kind of a cool image to wrap up with, was like the water flowing and things starting to grow, I guess.
Yeah, I thought that a lot of the transitions in the movie were really good. It wasn't like a, like, meanwhile, in Madrid. Yeah. It seemed like he...
It was like a little clock wipe a la Star Wars.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
On Naboo.
Like
would have been funny if they would have done the whole, like, 1 hour earlier.
Oh, God.
But, earlier on in the movie, there's, like, that soldier who's on leave visiting his family, and then he's, like, training the little boys in, like, marching formation, and then it kind of cuts to the soldiers in Madrid, and I was like, okay, that's a good way to visually transition from one to the other. One thing I was going to bring up that I thought was interesting that, again, kind of, gets at the idea that Ivens was like making the viewer aware of the fact that it was a movie and not like completely real life, was like the way that the machine gun sound was obviously just like a loop that was playing like over and over again, like, and to a point where I was like kind of irritated with it, but I thought that that was like the point when I was all
and Phillips that. In Philips radio, the sound was goofily fake in a way that, like, it's at certain points, it sounded like someone was, like, making the noises with their mouth. Like, there was a part where they were, like, throwing boxes up onto a truck, and it was like, and I was like, really? So I think that's, like, a thing with him, because obviously he could have, like, I made films in this same manner, obviously not on the front lines of a war, I didn't use my mouth to make the noises. I went out with a recording device and recorded similar sounds, and It still didn't sound super realistic, but way more realistic than his film sound.
That reminds me of that. There was a movie that you and I made, Ruben, called "You're in Class," where it was me in class having to go to the bathroom, and just all the sounds are you just making them with your mouth. And you weren't even making the sounds. You were just like saying the word that they were. You were just like clock, 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 clock.
That's the sound that a clock makes. I don't know what you're talking about. What? I live in a cartoon world.
That it's all diegetic.
Clock, clock, clock.
I live in a cartoon world.
Would have been funny if he would also
went dog
like,
say,
Patrick,
dog,
Patrick, dog. Patrick, Patrick.
Dog, 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 dog.
And they all use the English words.
Shin, shin.
People in China shin, are like, shin. What does clock mean? And what does the clock keep saying it?
Un xian, un xian, un xian. I can't remember what it is in Spanish. What is dog in Spanish?
Perro.
All right, perro. Perro, 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 perro.
This might be a nice time to transition into the Googling portion of...
Yeah, what do we want to Google?
I haven't figured that out yet.
Jonathan Rosenbaum has some nice things to say about Joris Ivens.
Yeah.
Yeah, he wrote a whole pretty long article about him, but that was part of what, made me watch Valparaiso, actually, when I was doing that for the Letterboxd thing. I thought it was interesting. I mean, it's a pretty good tactical decision, I guess, to, from the propaganda viewpoint, that like Hemingway pitches the people as like a bunch of volunteers who are so moved by this cause, and that the Franco's army is basically just that. It's a bunch of like professional soldiers that are killing's what they do, as opposed to these people who are fighting for a real cause.
Yeah. But their land. I like the way, like, Earth was really, like, the whole Earth thing was definitely pretty meaningful in this context. Like, it was not, it was like, I mean, in one way, maybe it was almost like, you know, like, almost romanticized in a way. Like, yes, protect the Spanish Earth from the wrong feet or whatever step on it, or I don't know, the sacred Spanish earth. It's got a little bit of that on it too, but like the imagery we already mentioned with the irrigation and so on and so forth, and it's just this whole idea of like this is like, you know, this is their land in a sense of like they take care of it, you know, it's them in a way. Made it like less like it wasn't just like a war propaganda movie that made it like something else, something more than that.
I agree that it's a little more than just propaganda, but I do feel like this is like one of the situations where I'm like, well, how else do you respond to the fascists? Like,
what are the fascists making on the other side? Probably propaganda.
Oh, sure. Well, propaganda, just like in the sense of what this film is, you know, not like even judging it in some way. But yeah.
Someone was like, how do you, like on Letterboxd, was like, how do you judge a film like this? It's just based propaganda. I have no interest in it or something like that. And I was just kind of like, contextually, I was like, I mean, I guess I sort of understand what you're saying, but it is propaganda against, like, you know, an invading force trying to conquer all of Europe and exterminate, like, a whole race of people. Right?
It's probably a good thing to be against
propagandistically. You can get on your soapbox about that. You know, you're allowed.
I thought you were actually just saying, like, how else do you respond to fascism besides war? And I was like, man. Because generally I think of myself as, like, being kind of a pacifist, but it's like, it's pretty hard to argue with the fact that, like, war was necessary in this case.
Yeah, I guess. But, yeah.
I don't know. What do you do? I mean, what do you do?
What are you going to do?
I think the Europeans would have won the war without the Americans. They could have been pacifists, but then they just would have looked like even bigger losers than they already did.
Uh-huh.
Now they claim that they're the champions and they didn't really do that much.
Yeah.
Thanks, Russia.
Oh, brother.
Yeah. No biggie.
Oh, brother.
Yeah, no, I mean, that is kind of what I'm saying. You just took it a step further than what I was saying, which is that when someone is dedicated to, you know, conquering the earth, you kind of...
Right.
And they refuse to see anybody else as human. I just don't know, like, if you're going to convince them otherwise.
Yeah. Although, like, I guess it's a little bit more complicated when fascism against the West and fascism against the East, you know, like, the whole race of people was directed towards the Slavic people, whereas the French... You know, like, yeah, they kind of invaded them, but they, like, also, like, talked to them, and it was not just exterminations going there. Like, I think, like, with that, when it comes to that, you need to be, like, a little bit, it's a little bit different. The Spanish situation is also a little bit different, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, 37, but, like...
So it's not like, yeah, I mean, at a certain point, I'm saying propaganda makes sense. But in 37, I don't think it was necessarily clear.
Right.
What was going to happen.
Yeah. Although, yeah. Certainly seemed necessary for Spain. It's so weird to me that, like, this is, like, a really interesting part of history to me, because it seems so strange that, like, a whole bunch of people were like, we do not want Franco because he's a douchebag, and then he just, like, won and then just managed to stay in power for, like, 40 years afterwards.
Yeah.
Really crazy that,
kind of just, like, let him be there.
No one wanted him, and yet he managed to exercise that kind of control.
Yeah. But I guess in the context of all the douchebags that got to be in control after the Second World War in Europe, he wasn't even, like, the worst one. Like, he was pretty bad.
No,
but,
not at all.
But, like, there were all kinds of people around that time and stayed in power for a long time. So
that's true. But, I mean, compared to, like, Hitler or Stalin, who had, like, the support of the people initially and then kind of, like, took it farther and farther than maybe even some people were expecting.
Yeah.
And like, kind of usurped control through, like, political savvy. Franco was just, like, a general that most people didn't like. And then he's like, I want to be in charge. Mm. And then, like, took all the soldiers that were loyal to him and, like, took control.
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting.
Sure.
I mean, some people supported him. It's not like everyone was, like, pro-socialism or anything, but
yeah.
It's still, yeah, I mean, also the Catholic Church was a big supporter of him because the social...
Bringing it back to our off-air discussion and Catholic Church's dedication to the destruction of the world.
Right.
There we go. It's very interesting. I worked on a movie that was about the Catholic Church last weekend, so...
Was it Dogma 2?
No, it was not.
Was it Dog Meh 2? As in the second dog? No, not
Dog.
No, not meh. Like, no, the film movement, Dogme. Dog Meh.
No.
Dog
Meh. I thought it was like Dog Meh, like M-E-H.
No, I know, that's why he kept saying it and I kept trying to correct him.
Yeah.
No, you didn't get my joke.
Von Trier,
it's a different joke.
It's a film joke, not a Kevin Smith joke.
And whoever else was involved in that were not on this project.
Well, it would be the second dogma, so it would be a completely different group of people to jump into.
Yeah. Neo-dogma.
Dedicated to...
Plus, the new pope is so cool now, so it's all good.
Yeah.
Catholic Church. Everyone,
just like Barack Obama.
Let's just forget about the whole thing.
Pope Jorge.
He's a cool guy. He takes a cab. You know, like, he's a cool guy.
That's our new thing, is we put cool people in charge, and then everyone feels okay, and terrible stuff just keeps going on. It's like, oh, Barack Obama smokes and plays basketball? Sweet.
Yeah. Oh, brother.
Sweet.
And he gives really powerful speeches about racial inequality.
Mm.
Yeah. And then doesn't do anything about it.
But also...
Oh, brother.
Who would have ever expected a discussion about the Spanish Civil War to get depressing all of a sudden?
Yeah.
What is even happening anymore?
Yeah.
We should all just become Italian futurists and embrace our soon-to-be destruction.
I was thinking you were about to say embrace our inner fascists. Yes.
Futurists. That too, of course. They're part and parcel, I think.
Does anyone else have anything they want to say about Joris Ivens or the Spanish Earth?
No, I think.
Yeah, I think we covered.
I think we nailed it.
We're pretty good.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye-bye.